This is the Mindful Musical Life Podcast. I'm Kevin Miske.
My guest today is Dr. Breanne Borden. Dr. Borden teaches trumpet at the Crane School of Music at the State University of New York, Potsdam. She is also a co-founder of YogaForAllMusicians.com, where she offers instruction in yoga of all levels, specifically tailored towards the needs, both physical and emotional, of musicians. Breanne is a certified experienced registered yoga teacher and a certified Yoga Alliance continuing education provider. In this conversation, we talk about her background, her own private practice and experience with yoga and meditation, how it's impacted her life as a performer, and how it's also impacted her day-to-day life. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Dr. Breanne Borden. Where I usually like to start is just kind of asking you what got you interested in yoga to start with and why you began in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was very fortunate to be raised by somebody who practiced yoga. So I was taken to yoga classes by my mom starting in like middle school. And I continued to take those classes with her pretty much weekly, but I kind of saw it more as a time to spend with my mom rather than paying attention to what the actual practice was. And even then, I was also really hesitant towards meditation. I remember very specifically, she was a member of the Zen Center. I grew up in Rochester, New York, so she was a member of the Rochester Zen Center, and they would go to meditate. And I remember being a teenager and being like, "You're going somewhere else to go stare at a wall." And it like totally blew my mind. And now I love meditation and advocate strongly for it. But that's kind of where I got started. It was in the house, which was really fortunate for me. I then went off to college and pretty immediately had experienced performance-based injuries. So I got tendonitis on my shoulders and tennis elbow. And I went to a physical therapist who then was like, "You used to go to yoga. You should really go back to yoga." And I went back, and I at the time had a mentor who was on faculty at my school. I actually now teach at the school I went to for undergrad, so at Crane. And her and I would go every single week to a yoga class, and it totally changed everything. So that was kind of my path into where it started and then where I really got dedicated to it.
Yeah, that's great. So can you talk a little bit about your mindfulness practice as well before we dive deep into the yoga practice stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mindfulness, I will say that practicing it, and my form of practicing mindfulness is meditation. I know that it has been and can be practiced and interpreted in different ways, but for me, it's a meditation and sometimes a breathwork practice. That didn't come as, I want to say, intuitively as like physical movement did for me, because I, like many musicians, have been busy since the day I was born. And I really like to keep moving, and I liked to feel productive. And I liked to, you know, say that I worked out in some way or something like that. And then I started noticing a lot of the moments of like stillness in Shavasana in a yoga class. That's a meditation, that's a mindfulness practice. And I started realizing how impactful that was for me. So I began seeking out just doing that on its own, which was really hard for me because being still can be challenging. But it then became more integrated into the rest of my life. So in ways other than dedicating, like I'm going to meditate 30 minutes a day or whatever it is, I realized that I could start to implement that mindfulness into doing the dishes, into walking my dog, into all these other things that I now had. It almost felt like I not then had a superpower where I could just access that mindfulness and that presence whenever I wanted, and I didn't necessarily need to be still for it, though. Because it's so hard for me to be still, it's really important that I continue to do that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's so interesting that you said that it was you appreciated movement more than you did the stillness. And I totally see that in so many musicians as well as myself that need to constantly be accomplishing something and feeling like you're sitting still and meditating. It's like you're wasting time.
Yeah. And it's hard to realize that. You know, I was actually talking to a physical therapist yesterday who was saying how musicians are, we're so used to going, but like where the change actually happens, yes, in the practice room, but where it integrates into our body and our mind is over sleep. It's during the rest that it's happening. It's during the stillness and the silence. And I think that that's really kind of like not taught to us from basically ever, unless you specifically seek it out in the classical music world, at least.
Right. I think there's this perception of laziness if you are spending time, you know, when you could be practicing doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a trap that I think I know I fall into pretty regularly, and I'm sure many musicians do as well. That need to be constantly achieving something or striving for something, and if you're not, then you have this concept of, well, someone else might be, and if, you know, what if I don't, and then the other person's working harder than me, this imaginary competitor that we have in our minds. And so I think it's a great reminder that how effective that can be.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's wonderful. So why don't we get into a little bit more of your specific yoga practice, and maybe as a bridge in, you can talk a little bit about the style of yoga that you do. You know, I know there's a lot of different interpretations of the word yoga, especially in the United States. So I'm really curious to hear kind of what approach you take as an instructor and as a practitioner of yoga.
Yeah, absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head. There's a lot of yoga out there. And whenever someone comes to me and says, you know, like yoga wasn't for them, I'm like, well, try different yoga, because I think there's probably something out there for everybody at this point, for better or worse. But I was fortunate to have been exposed to quite a few different types of yoga throughout my life. So my trainings, my main training through yoga is a vinyasa or power type yoga. However, I seem to have collected yoga teacher trainings, and also am really passionate about teaching yin yoga, which is a more stillness based practice, as well as I used to teach hot yoga and something called yoga sculpt, which is using weights with yoga. I have some personal training experience in my certification somewhere in there as well. So it's all kind of influenced by all of that. To answer your question, like very shortly, I prefer a more vinyasa or flow based yoga. What I teach through my studio is more that, and kind of like what people would call hatha, which is a little bit slower, a little bit more postural alignment, always breath movement. And then I also teach a yin yoga class, which is, I always describe it by saying you're on your butt or your back, basically. So it's a lot of seated and laying down postures and holding them for an extended period of time to kind of access a little bit deeper in the body, and then also implement more of a meditation practice within that.
Yeah, that's great. The yoga that I've done has been, you know, a potpourri of styles and approaches. You know, one class I'd walk into and it would be like trance EDM yoga, and I'm like, this is not my style. And then the next one is, you know, like much more meditative, and that's what I resonated with much more, just coming from my meditation background. So it's nice to hear that you kind of lean that more, and for my personal taste, that's kind of where I, you know, resonate more with a yoga class for sure.
Yeah, and that has changed. If you were to have asked me that question even 2 or 3 years ago, when I was getting my doctorate, I was working for a corporate yoga studio and in Phoenix, Arizona, which is very high energy just place mm-hmm. in general. And I was teaching a lot of fast paced yoga, a lot of that yoga sculpt stuff. And then the pandemic hit, and it like really has shifted what my teaching and my practice look like now, which has been really a blessing in a lot of ways. Not that the pandemic has been, but the force of stillness has been.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing I liked on your website, you had a really nice list of trying to remember the exact wording that you used, kind of your emphasized ideas about yoga and like the specific kind of approaches that your studio uses and your mm-hmm. and the beliefs that you kind of generally hold as a unit. But something that I noticed that I really liked was you're targeting the specific physical and emotional needs of musicians. So can you talk a little bit about what you've experienced as our specific emotional needs and physical needs as musicians?
Yeah, a lot of it. So my studio is co-owned by two other awesome people, Clara Howard and Amelia Rosenberger. And it's really great because the three of us all have different experience within this realm. So Claire is actually a therapist, and her dream is to really work specifically with musicians. She has 2 degrees in flu and has been in the classical music world for a lot of her life and has pivoted to therapy. And she's really, really great at talking about the emotional needs of musicians and how, you know, we live in this like really high stress environment and high competitive environment, like very mm-hmm. It's not the way that musicians live is not how a lot of people live, and it's not what our nervous systems are necessarily set up to support. So we're constantly putting ourselves into these fight or flight scenarios, and there's a lot of kind of old school values out there. I mean, even what we were talking about earlier, where, you know, if you're not practicing, somebody else is. Or, you know, no pain, no gain, like those kinds of things still exist. And musicians are kind of behind the curve when it comes to updating how we work and how we operate. And so we try to address that and talk really openly and freely about those things and about the mental health struggles that musicians have, as well as a lot of the common injuries. So when we're teaching, we like to kind of offer concepts in yoga and bring them to the practice room, in the sense that I might speak in class about the concept of aparigraha, which is one of the it's part of the yoga sutras, and it means non-attachment. And this practice of non-attachment, and you know, as a trumpet player, I miss notes all the freaking time. So how can I in the practice room, you know, not let that totally derail the rest of my practice session, or on stage, even if I'm performing and you miss the high note that you're stressed about the whole time. And then how do you not let that snowball into a bunch of things? Like, that to me is what the meditation practice is. It's noticing those things and then not letting them totally take over you. So we talk a lot about how we can kind of bring these concepts into our playing and stuff like that. And with the physical side of it, we try to address a lot of the common injuries, which tend to be, you know, wrists, shoulders, neck, and do our best to provide modifications or options very, very, very specific to that, that people wouldn't necessarily get in a normal yoga studio, because you're not, you know, the average yoga teacher has not much knowledge, if any, about, you know, tendonitis or lateral epicondylitis or anything like that. And I'm certainly no doctor, but I know how to modify for those things because I've had to deal with them myself.
Yeah, that's such an important point to consider. I think that especially, I mean, for all of us, all musicians, and by the way, you're talking to a horn player, so you're in good company with the fear of missing notes. I mean, there's so many specific things, like repetitive injuries that musicians of all types experience, you know, but I think especially of our string player colleagues and piano colleagues and people who are doing a lot of, like, or anybody, I mean, all of us, but my wife's a violinist, and so, you know, after a long concert set or something, she definitely has extra tension in her shoulders and specific spots in her wrists or hands or arms. And so, I mean, there's so many important things about that. And I feel like that might be a point of, a point that could discourage some musicians, like for fear of aggravating injuries or, you know, tender spots and things like that. So it's really nice to hear that you guys can, work with that and provide, you know, modifications and suggestions for musicians to be able to still participate fully in yoga without for fear of aggravating longstanding injuries.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the hope. And we try to bring in also professionals that, that know more than us, because, you know, what I tell my students all the time is I'm a doctor, but not that kind of doctor, you know? So I have information about a lot of this, but not expertise necessarily when it comes to diagnosing or really being able to prescribe anything. So we had a community night last night. Yeah, that was last night. My goodness. Where we had a guest, and we like to bring in as many guests as we can. And his name's Cody Weisbach, and he's a physical therapist in Boulder, and he specializes in working with musicians. So it was really cool to hear just his expertise beyond, you know, my own personal study and training of it. So that was really interesting, and I've been still like sitting with a lot of the stuff that he said because it blew my mind. So we need it.
Yeah, that's so great. There was another one of your values. That was the word I was searching for a while back. Mm-hmm. Is your team values, the list that I really enjoyed reading through that. But that asking for help as a sign of strength. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so nice that you demonstrate that as a teacher, but also it's such a good reminder for all of us as musicians, and really anybody, but especially us musicians. It's easy to fall into the trap once again of, like, if I can't figure it out on my own, then I'm somehow weak or not worthy of success or anything like that. So it's so good to have that as a main component of your teaching, and also just a good reminder for all of us.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We ask for help as much as we can, because we don't want to pretend like we can't do anything that we can't or that we don't know. And we're big Brené Brown and Glennon Doyle devotees, who both kind of preach that a lot. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about, maybe if you don't mind, some, you know, personal examples about how yoga or your meditation practice or both have kind of impacted you, either in your life generally or more specifically with music, or however you'd like to take that question? But
yeah, absolutely. I about 100 thoughts just came into my mind, flooded into my mind all at once. With music specifically, I saw a lot in performance anxiety. So I was a very anxious performer all through high school, to the point of like my jaw shaking, my hands getting clammy. I had, you know, the nature's vibrato experience of every time I performed, it would just sound like this wild, very wide vibrato because my jaw was shaking so much. And I kind of thought that was just something that I would have to deal with for like the rest of my life. Like, this is just a part of my journey. And if I practice more, it's supposed to get better. So I'm just going to keep trying to practice more. And when I started getting more into my yoga practice and realizing that I was being given these tools that I could use, not just in a yoga class, it shifted basically everything for me. I was breathing before I would go out on stage, and then I was suddenly more confident. I was, you know, realizing that a lot of the experiences that I was having of performance anxiety weren't as severe. And so that really, really changed things, and it gave me a new lens to view performing through. I didn't initially go to school wanting to be a performance major. I added it once I got there. And that part of that was that I didn't think that I could do it. And having just like that little added extra ounce of confidence, because I knew that I could sit there and say, you know, it's going to be okay. I'm still breathing. I'm still here. Like, this is just an experience. It's not determining my worth as a human being. And then suddenly everything got easier, or felt easier, I should say. And so that really shifted just my relationship with performing, which was huge, huge, huge for me. So, I guess that carried on to the rest of my life, to be honest. It carried on everywhere. I think, maybe some people disagree, but in a lot of ways, I'm not necessarily a typical yoga teacher in, I don't find myself to be like very relaxed or free-spirited, or, you know, like a lot of things that people might affiliate with somebody who practices yoga as much as I do. But they're just, it's like, I almost feel like it takes the edge off of things for me. Like it takes this little anxiety layer that lives within my brain. It kind of rids of that. And I can tell when I haven't been practicing, because that layer grows back on. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of brings me back to baseline.
Yeah, I resonate with so much of what you said. And I'm sure many people who, you know, practice yoga or meditation or any other contemplative practice, is kind of my all-encompassing term, mm-hmm. can experience something very similar. I know that when I started really actively practicing mindfulness, what I noticed about my, you know, performance anxiety would be that it was still present, but it was much quieter, and it was like further in the background.
Yeah.
It was one of those things that I could allow it to be there without it completely disrupting, you know, my flow in the moment, or, you know, my ability to execute on stage or anything else. It just was the sensations and the little thoughts and the little voice would still be there, but much quieter. And I feel like, is that kind of what you were saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. The way I kind of think about it is like, if there's, I think I stole this from Elizabeth Gilbert, but there's this analogy of like the feelings that you're experiencing are sitting in the car with you, but you're in the driver's seat and you're the person that's, you know, behind the wheel. And it's almost like, to me, it went from like that performance anxiety was sitting on my lap fighting for the steering wheel every performance. And now it's in the passenger seat, you know, like now it is in the passenger seat, and I'm the one behind the wheel. I'm the one with the keys to the car, and it is still there, but it's not in control.
Yeah. I think that's a great analogy. It sounds like something Elizabeth Gilbert would write, so
yeah.
We can go ahead and give her rough credit for that. But
perfect.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I think that that's such an important point, is that for me personally, when I first thought about meditation and mindfulness and doing that as a practice, my goal was like, oh, I want to do it because I want to be a better performer, mm-hmm. right? And I was like, I just want to do it to get rid of anxiety. It'll just like kill it, like it's a bug spray or something, yeah. right? But it's not that. It's just being able to allow emotions to be there. And then beyond that, it extends beyond just anxiety and just performance anxiety to any emotion you feel. You know, when I feel angry or frustrated or anything, it's like, I'm not angry or frustrated. I'm feeling anger or frustration.
Right. Yes.
So it's a disconnect. And something you said too about not judging yourself for mistakes or for the way that you're feeling, right? That key element of so many different meditation practices of the non-judgmental environment.
Yeah.
Right? That is, it sounds like a very prominent feature in your teachings as a yoga instructor as well, that like just work with yourself, work with your own body. It's not a competition. And, mm-hmm. and that it's funny that you practice that in a yoga studio or in a meditation, and it's going to be there when you pick up the horn again.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It integrates more than we realize, even if you're not trying to right. integrate it. It's there.
Yeah. So let's say that there's someone listening to our conversation here, and they're really excited about the idea, but where should they start? Like, obviously we can direct them to your wonderful website, and they can do some online practices with you all. But what types of things should they be looking for, like in maybe a local yoga teacher or instructor? What types of language or descriptions of classes would you recommend for a musician specifically to kind of get started?
Yeah, that's a really great question. It's hard to know exactly, because people resonate with such different things. And to be honest, so many people seem to have turned to online yoga instruction. So whether that's, you know, with us or using YouTube videos or something like that, if somebody is feeling a little bit of anxiety, because this, especially when trying something new, there can be some anxiety about showing up to a yoga studio. And so having a video that you can watch ahead of time, or, you know, get used to seeing what it looks like and what some of the names of the postures are, that can be really helpful. Finding anything online. There's a lot of people who do some, a lot is a strong term, but there are some people who do yoga for musicians online and in a pretty good way. If they are interested in going to a studio, I'm somebody who loves to go to a studio, physically be at a studio, which is a little ironic since I run a virtual one. But I love to be at a physical studio because I love to be around people. I'm very much an extrovert. It fills my cup to just be surrounded by people. You know, I do my best work at a coffee shop when no one's talking to me, but I'm around people. So I really like going to one and looking for descriptions that kind of fit your interest in movement in terms of energy level. So, or I don't know if energy level is the right way to say it, but pace maybe. So if someone is a runner and has not done very much yoga at all, but really likes the cardiovascular movement of running, they might go for a more faster paced yoga class, and that is gonna kind of serve their needs. It's, you know, especially like a vinyasa or power yoga is kind of like moving meditation. But if somebody is more new to it than, or not new to it, but, you know, wanting something that is on the more slow meditation stillness side of it, any restorative or yin classes will be great. And just making sure that the teachers, you get a good like gut feeling with the teacher, right? It's just like taking lessons with anybody, you know, on your instrument. The teacher matters just as much as it would on the instrument. Somebody that you trust, somebody that makes you feel seen and safe. Those are all really, really important things. And I think it's really easy because there are so many, you know, teachers on a roster at a yoga studio. It's really easy to go to one class and be like, well, I didn't really like that studio, or I didn't really like that. And it could have just been the teacher, because right. It's, there are just so many. Country is oversaturated with yoga teachers, and there are some really, really, really great ones. But with that comes some not so awesome ones as well. And so using as much care, like your body matters as much as, and your mind matters as much as studying to play your instrument. And so people care so much about who they study with on their instrument. And so it can be almost the same thing. See what kind of gut feelings you get with a yoga instructor.
Right. You know, I think a lot of responses I get from musicians when I talk to them about, you know, starting a meditation practice or, you know, a yoga practice or anything, one of the big things they often say is, oh, I don't have any time for that. Right. That's like the war cry of the musician is, I don't have any time to do anything. Right.
Yep.
So how would you suggest like a musician deal with that kind of maybe either reality or perceived block?
Right. Yeah. It's going to sound really corny, but I think that these sorts of practices gift you time without you realizing it. So yes, it might be one more thing on your schedule, but having this, like, I truly think of it as a superpower. So like having this superpower of mindfulness, is going to make it so a lot of other things, that homework, you might be more focused while doing it, or your practice session might go faster, or something like that, because it gifts you this time back, this ability to bring what you learn in that session to the rest of your life, and things feel less draining because you are more in tune with yourself, and you're more in tune with your body, and you're more in tune with your thoughts. And so you're not fighting against all these external things telling you to quiet your thoughts, or to, you know, not have certain thoughts, or to not listen to your body. And instead you're really in tune, and therefore can operate at a higher frequency, a higher level.
Yeah, absolutely. I notice, in my own practice, if I give myself even just 5 minutes at the beginning of a session, practice session, to just sit quietly and follow my breath, or, you know, any whatever meditation I've chosen to do for those 5 minutes, it makes my practice session much more enjoyable and much more efficient. And yeah. I don't practice mistakes nearly as much as if I would, as if I'm more frantic in a practice session. I don't know if you experienced a similar situation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, when I'm teaching lessons too, I have students who will come in and be kind of, I can feel their frantic energy and I'm like, okay, we need a moment. Like, let's take a moment. Let's take a few deep breaths together, you know, and slow them down. And it's that lesson 100% of the time ends up being so much more productive than it would have been if I just let them keep that, you know, energy with them and moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. So we've covered a lot of great points here. There's so much awesome information in this, but are there any questions that I didn't ask you that you think I should have, or any talking points you want to make sure we discuss?
Oh gosh. I mean, you got it. You got it. Other than I'll say that all of this, I'm really excited that you're having these conversations and that you're bringing more and more awareness to mindfulness and to meditation and to yoga and all of that, because I'm of the firm belief that we've always needed this, but now more than ever, you know, two years into a pandemic, we really need it. We really, really need it. And there's going to be, unfortunately, not to kind of, you know, get dark, but there's going to be some long-term effects of what we're all experiencing right now, as a culture, but also, you know, as musicians with what gigs have been looking like and how things have been operating, you know. And so having these tools to sit with your thoughts and to be with yourself and to recognize kind of what's going on in your head is going to help so much. Hopefully, I think it will. And it has helped me, you know, maintain some of my, I don't even know if I would say composure, but, you know, I've been able to stay connected to myself in moments when, without this practice, I don't think I would be able to.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's so helpful to help keep perspective and for me, distance as well.
Yeah.
So less reactive and more responsive to situations.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm sure there's lots of people who are super excited about what you're doing. So how can listeners find you? I know that they can visit the website yogaforallmusicians.com. I noticed that you guys offer some free introductory courses here and there, free introductory classes and things, and there's a great community on that website to start with. But where else can they find more information about you and what you're doing?
Yeah, we also have an Instagram. It's Yoga for All Musicians, so that's pretty easy. I am on Instagram, which is, what is it? Brian Borden. That's an easy one to remember. I love to answer questions via email. I love to talk about this stuff, so anybody can email me. I'm easily accessible at just bordenbl@potsdam.edu, and I'm happy to chat, and yeah. I'm on Facebook, all of that good stuff. So I'm probably, I believe, the only Brian Borden in the world. So I'm pretty Googleable, for better or worse.
Great. Yeah, I'll make sure to put links to all that stuff in the notes for the podcast. But for now, I guess we'll finish up, and I'll look forward to another conversation, I'm sure, in the future. Thank you so much for the time and for all the great information. It's been wonderful to talk to you, Brian.
Yeah, likewise. I really appreciate it.
Another big thank you to Brianne Borden for a wonderful conversation. And thank you all for listening. You can keep up to date on all of our new podcast releases and other news by following us on Instagram at Mindful Musical Life, or by visiting our website at mindfulmusicallife.com.